Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we interview people who have built companies, sold companies, taken companies public, raised funds, and are making a significant impact in the world today. My name is Nathan Bird, and I'll be your host. Our special guest today, and is part of the founding team of Inveterate, is exceptionally talented in the art of understanding online marketing, developing and maintaining relationships, the art of overcoming, detailed e-commerce systems, and the overall journey of entrepreneurship from startup to experiencing exits with multiple companies. Andy Montaigne is a true talent in the world of business, and he has his sights set to help you inspire through his story and help you overcome the various challenges that may arise on your Founders Odyssey. So join us today on this Founders Odyssey podcast. Thank you for joining us, Andy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Super excited, Nathan.
Honestly, just excited to get to know you better as a person, not just a businessman. Okay. That's what I love about this podcast. So the first question I love to ask people is, what does entrepreneurship mean to you?
Sure. If I look at the definition of entrepreneurship and how I see that, it's really about the intellectual ownership of your ideas and also the ability to create resiliency and become self-reliant. And so there's probably no better feeling in the world than having true ownership over what you're designing and what you're building and not having to rely on red tape that exists a lot in the corporate world. So I think that that's one of the most important things to me is having that ownership over my intellectual property, but also just growing in from a resiliency perspective.
Well, isn't it interesting in entrepreneurship, you have the freedom to create whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can double down on those ideas. Nobody's telling you no,
yeah.
You know, for the most part, right? I mean, you've experienced it. Obviously, there are things that you have to tiptoe around at times, as you know. But share with us real quick about the very beginning stages of Andy and his life from a young little boy.
Sure.
And then how were you supported from your family to, in, you know, kind of go towards business? Or tell us more.
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up in Pennsylvania, so northwestern PA, just south of Erie, north of Pittsburgh. Went to Penn State, so I was very much a PA boy through and through. My parents were incredibly supportive my entire childhood, all the way through, you know, high school into college, and letting me make the decisions that were best for me at that time. And of course, when you're growing up, you think that the decisions you're making are the correct ones because you don't know what you don't know. And so I was, you know, a decent student in school, but I would say average at best, but we'll call it decent. I have a very successful sister. She's a surgeon, and, you know, always she was valedictorian of our high school. She went on to do incredible things, go to one of the top med schools in America. And then I was at Penn State and, you know, just kind of hanging out, trying to figure out what my path was. So I had a tremendous time there. I made a lot of connections at Penn State. It's an incredible alumni network, and also just a really rich area for culture when it comes to that college experience. After college, I was, you know, I had a couple degrees in psychology and political science. And so I was thinking, do I want to go the political route and support on campaigns, work my way up that ladder? Obviously a pretty brutal path to take. There's a lot of challenges with that when it comes to politics, as we all know. So I ended up not having a job lined up after I graduated from college. And so I got a nice softball to work in the insurance industry. So I started selling health insurance as well as annuities. And so I had my property and casualty and health life insurance licenses. And then there was a huge downturn in the health insurance industry at that time because of the Affordable Care Act. And so I was a broker. And so I was selling these health plans to a number of different individuals and businesses, sized from, you know, small business all the way up to mid-sized to large-sized businesses. Those commissions went away overnight. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, what do I do now? So from my Penn State connections, one of my my best friends from school, I called him. I said, "Hey, yeah, what are you up to?" Because I knew he was out in California, and I said, "What, you know, what do you have going on?" And, you know, we continued to talk weekly for a couple months, and then he said, "Why don't you just come out to California? I'm working for this guy. He's a serial entrepreneur, which, by the way, I hate the term serial entrepreneur, but it's what it is, right? Many businesses, many investments, very, very, very successful guy. He's like, just come out and you know, just see what we've got going on out here. So, okay, I get on a flight, and I head out to San Diego, into Rancho Santa Fe, which is probably the ritziest part of San Diego outside of La Jolla. I was blown away, and I was like, well, this is a totally different life than the Rust Belt in northwestern Pennsylvania, where, you know, that's an exciting place to be, maybe 6 months out of the year, because then it just turns terrible with the weather. And so I was like, well, I'm thinking about it, and I got to meet his boss, the guy that he was working for. He was living in his guest house at the time, my friend, on this huge estate. And so I was like, well, this is pretty interesting. So I got to talking with him more. And he said, you know what? I think that there's an opportunity for you to come out and work with us. And so I quit my job, and I packed a carry-on suitcase. I had $1,000 in my pocket, literally $1,000. That's all the money I had to my name at that point. I get on the next flight, and I land there, and I realize very quickly, there's no job there for me. It was one of those situations where, yeah, well, you know, I think there's an opportunity here, but that's not exactly how it went down. So I had to end up sticking around. I was like, well, I'm not going home because I just quit my job and I have no money and I can't buy a flight home. So I was like, well, I'm going to stick around. And I was like, hey, dude, I'm not leaving. And this was to, you know, my friend's boss who's the serial entrepreneur. Like, I'm not leaving. Let's try to figure something out. And so I ended up driving him around for quite a while to, you know, different events, meeting different business associates that he had, all the way from, you know, San Diego to the Bay Area in Silicon Valley. So after about 2 weeks of just doing that, not getting paid, he said, I think I have a project that would work for you. And I was like, okay. And so this project was with a company called Proactive. It's a skincare company that everyone probably knows pretty well just from their infomercials. But he had tremendous connections across the entire Silicon Valley ecosystem from social media. He was one of the early investors in Palantir, you know, a lot of like very, very influential people. And so the idea was, we have this project with Proactive where they're running 5,500 commercials a week, but the new generation is now on social media. Mm. And so this would have been 2015. And so it was quite a while ago. And so he's like, what we want to do and what the contract that we're looking at signing with Proactive is we're going to help transition their traditional media spend on TV over to social media. And so that's Twitter, that's Facebook, that's Instagram. TikTok wasn't there yet. But either way, that was the idea. Let's move their ad spend over. I didn't know anything about ad spend. I didn't know anything about social media other than the fact that I had a Facebook profile. And so it ends up that I am in the headquarters of Twitter with this guy. And we're sitting down with the COO of Twitter. And I'm green behind the ears, but I had downloaded a digital marketing textbook onto my phone. And so I was trying to learn as much as I could, as fast as I could, just like in the car going there, like sitting in the lobby, like what I want to use the right vernacular, right? I don't want to sound like a total idiot. And so I was like learning these different things. And so we're sitting in this boardroom, CEO of Twitter. It's kind of a, you know, like a mastermind powwow session of like, what is the strategy here for how do we transition off of traditional media over to digital media? And everybody was, you know, kind of scratching their heads. And I was like, wait a second, I just read something in this book. And I just chimed in. And I shouldn't have done it, but I'm glad that I did. Because I'm just like, you know, kind of the scribe in the background, right? So I'm not like, no one even knows my name. And I was like, I think that we're targeting the wrong demographic here. I was like, the demographic that needs Proactive or needs that acne care are teenagers. They don't have credit cards. Their moms and their dads have the credit cards. We need to be targeting their moms and dads with these ads on social media because we know all these parents have Instagram. They have Facebook for sure. It's like that's who we have to target. And then obviously we'll run secondary campaigns to the kids so they think it's cool because they don't want to be the kids that are using Proactive because they have acne because it's a confidence killer. But at the end of the day, who's paying for this product? It's the parents.
Yes.
Anyway, so everyone just kind of stops and looks at me and they're like, who the heck is this guy? And from that moment on, we drove back to, actually we flew back on a private jet, which is the first time I had ever been on a private jet. And I was like really just totally out of my element. And we fly back to San Diego and I, you know, we get back to his house and he goes, I think that this is a good job for you. I think this is a good way for you to dip your toes in. I think you're going to be successful with it. And so I ended up working with Proactive as a consultant, transitioning their entire marketing strategy from traditional media over to digital. So it was pretty interesting and definitely the epitome of fake it till you make it.
So let's talk a little bit about you flying over. You got $1,000 in your pocket and you had to go all in though.
I had
right?
no choice.
So yeah. Let's define all in and what that means to you. And then of course now we've heard the story and you were able to obviously land this position. Mm-hmm. So share with us a little bit about that all in mentality, no matter what.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was, one, I had a chip on my shoulder because I was always the younger child in the family that was obviously not quite as successful as my sister. She's an absolute brilliant rock star. And so, you know, I was like, well, I haven't found my place in this world yet. And she found it much quicker than me. She doubled down at a very young age that she's like, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a surgeon. And I was like, I want to just hang out and like see where the world takes me. I can talk to people. I can have conversations. I think that's exciting. And so for me, I had this chip on my shoulder, but also I think there was a lot of ego involved where I had quit my job in a small town and I was not going to fail. Like it wasn't an option for me because if I then came back with my tail tucked between my legs, that's incredibly embarrassing. And then what do I do from there? You know, I have these degrees from a very, very good university. I have the support of my family, but I don't want to go back and have failed. And so I said, okay, we're doubling down because I don't have a choice right now. I have to make this work.
Let's talk about ego real quick and how it can benefit you and how it has benefited you. And then also how has it become or how has it been detrimental to your success?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good question. I think that it's helped me just from a confidence perspective, even though sometimes that's false confidence, right? There's a difference between having an ego and having really, really great confidence. For me, I think that really helped push me through that chip on my shoulder, which could be attributed to ego, depending on how you look at it. I said, well, I know that I have to do this because I'm not going to fail because it's going to make me look terrible, and I always want to be that guy that's winning. And so that, I think, helped me tremendously, and it still does to this day. Where it hurt me, I think, was skipping necessary steps along the way because I got really, I don't want to say lucky because I think I know that I earned through a lot of, like, trials and tribulations, blood, sweat, and tears, what I've gone through, lots of peaks and valleys. But I think the ego allows you to start having this idea that you can skip steps that are absolutely essential in entrepreneurship. And so you can't put the cart ahead of the horse, and you can't count the money until it's in the bank. And so I think that that's something that that ego definitely stifled my growth. But it's also okay with me at this point. Mm-hmm. I've accepted it because it's growth. It's still growth, and it's understanding.
Let's talk about some of those steps that could potentially be skipped for everyone out there that's listening. Let's try to zone in maybe on two or three of those steps that you may have jumped over.
Yeah, for sure. As soon as I finished up that contract job, I was introduced to an agency, an e-commerce agency, a Shopify agency in San Diego. This was the number one implementation partner for Shopify at that time. Still, actually now one of the biggest and possibly the biggest agency in the world for Shopify implementation. And so I was given the job of chief of staff right after that because I had obviously come from a network that was incredibly powerful. I came from a network that put me in a position to be successful if I wanted to earn it, which I did work my butt off to earn it. Mm-hmm. And so then, that opens me up to a position that might not have had the qualifications for. I definitely had the tangibles, or the intangibles, I mean. And that's a big thing, is having the intangibles allows you to accelerate your career. But if you don't have the tangibles, that's where you start living in this fake it till you make it, yeah. Imposter syndrome type of headspace. And so I think that, really not allowing myself to learn the necessary skills, the hard skills that are required for a lot of these jobs, and just kind of riding that wave that I was on, it made things a lot harder for me in the end, because then I had to go back and learn a ton of things that maybe those weren't things that someone in my position should have to be learning at that point. So
let's fast forward to the position that you currently are in today and share with us how all these past experiences have really created a desire and a passion, right, about what you do and why you do what you do and why you love what you do. So share with us about that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, there were a lot of failures that I went through during this process, and those failures were attributed to skipping steps. And so I, you know, stepped on my shoelaces. I tripped over my own feet too many times, which caused me to, it forced me to learn those hard skills. It forced me to learn and really dig into not only the knowledge that's required for the ecosystem, but also the politics of the ecosystem. And so who's who in this ecosystem? And like, what do I need to learn from a skill set perspective to be able to compete with those people? And so, again, we go back to that mindset. I don't want to say this is ego. I think it's more of just a competitive fire that I've always had. I'm not going to be anything but the best. And that's what I have to tell myself.
I mean, it's a remember about ego. And it's interesting that as an entrepreneur, your preparation will give you the confidence. So totally. As soon as you understand, and you know you've understood this now because we've all experienced this, like when you're prepared, for example, I shoot a lot of basketball, right?
Yeah.
And I know that I can make a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of shots. And I'm very confident in that just because I do it all the time.
Right.
So it's like, what are you doing all the time, right?
Yep.
To then increase your overall confidence. So then you can be, it's not ego driven. It really is confidence and knowing that you can achieve what, you know, you set out.
Totally. And so I think that was, a very, very tough learning lesson for me of not, maybe having ego, but mm-hmm. then learning how to have the confidence to
That's
do
good.
Those things. And then also backing that up with actual hard knowledge about becoming an expert in my field.
And you know, it's interesting. And for those of you out there, I'm sure you guys have experienced this, but, if you think you're a little too much, in business, you'll get humbled very quickly.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can only go so far without actually putting in the work, right? So.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, that's just entrepreneurship in general. You're going to have more failures than you're going to have successes.
Yeah.
And that's what shapes, you know, your vision for what actually wins at the end.
So how'd you get to the current position that you're in right now with the current company that you are building? And, you know, I'm really excited about hearing that story too. And then also remember why you love what you do.
Sure. Yeah. And so this is something that's really, really critical to entrepreneurs in general and just anyone in the business world. And it's the networking ability that you have. And so throughout the, you know, almost a decade that I've been working in this ecosystem, I've made a lot of connections. And a lot of people have seen me fail, but they've also seen me succeed in a lot of different arenas. And so the way that I was able to kind of get into the current company, Inveterate, and start building that as a part of the founding team was just based on the amount of people that I had talked to that were involved in this. There are, you know, some really incredible investors that we have, really incredible board members. And so they had the confidence to bring me in to build this product and to build and to help build this company from zero to where we're at today. And so I think that that's one thing that everybody has to do is kind of put their guard down a little bit when they're out networking. Meet as many people as you can because you never know what's going to happen or who you're going to meet or how that's going to tie back. It's a very, very small world at the end of the day when we're talking business and we're talking about highly capable individuals. They are, you know, that's something that we have to be really proud of being and to be a successful entrepreneur. You have to be a very, very highly operating, smart individual that, and it's not about intelligence necessarily. It's just about making the right moves and not making any career-limiting moves. So anyways, long story short, the way that I kind of got involved with this was through network and also through just, you know, proof of hard work and some of those successes, but also the failures too. He failed at this, right? But now he's learned from that. And how do you take those learnings and create something truly spectacular from that? And so it's all about personal growth. Now, what do I love about what I do? That's an interesting question. And I think that changes on a daily basis, whether I love it or hate it. But that's also entrepreneurship. It's peaks and valleys. Mm-hmm. And so what I do love about it, I love the highs. I love the challenges. I love the ability to continue to create relationships across the ecosystem. But I also love to see my own personal growth, but also the growth of my team. And so I have, you know, 9 direct reports within the company right now, and I spend a lot of time helping them grow. And so what are the things that are going to make you more successful? And, you know, it's going to be different for every single person, but being able to see that personal growth is really exciting for me.
Let's talk a little bit about the actual company, the intricacies of it, and sure, how you guys can solve problems for those that are listening out here in the e-commerce space.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we've mentioned a couple times, the company's name is Inveterate. We're about 2 years old right now. Our main focus is around reinventing loyalty, customer loyalty within the retail, specifically e-commerce space. And so we've seen, and this is one of the things that kind of, you know, sparked the idea for the company, is that there are loyalty programs out there within e-commerce that it was almost like a box you had to check as a business owner. And so you have to make sure that your MarTech stack, so any of the technologies that you're using to power your online store, you have to. There's a very, very set roadmap or playbook for what that should consist of. And loyalty, unfortunately, kind of fell into this space where we know we have to have it, we're going to just do a set it and forget it kind of mentality around it, and not totally focus on the top cohort of customers or the overall life cycle of a customer and the experience that they have from the first time they buy until, you know, where they're at today. And so that's that was one reason that we were like, okay, let's disrupt this area, because this is just a set it, forget it. We're checking the box as a business owner that we have to have a loyalty program, points-based systems where you spend, $10 and you earn 1 point, or you follow on Instagram and you get 1 point or 2 points. But what do those points actually mean? And so it was very, very confusing for the user. And I think that everybody faces that. And it's not a sticky strategy for brands to use, because if I have 500 points and that's going to get me $5, but it took me 100 different actions to get there, that's just not worth it to me. I'm going to go shop the competitor. I'm going to go shop the market to see what else is out there. So that was a big one. And then the second thing that really, you know, helped us get into this direction for reinventing loyalty within e-commerce was the fact that acquisition costs are so high. So the cost to acquire a new customer via a Facebook ad, via, you know, SMS, email, any of these different types of channels, it's incredibly expensive right now. Long gone are the days where you could put up a Facebook ad and make $100,000 off it after spending 10 bucks. That was what it used to be. And I think that the barrier to entry at that point was so low for these brands, and they just started printing money. That just changed drastically because there was so much competition brought into the market. And so now if we look at that, these brands are having a hard time acquiring new customers because it's so expensive. So the path to profitability is tough and the margins are shrinking. So what do we do to help support that from a loyalty perspective? So yes, let's start focusing on that top 10% cohort of customers that we know are spending, and their repeat purchase rate is high, their AOV is high. But how do we give them an even more stellar experience that they're willing to pay for? And so that's where the idea really was born from. Then after our learnings, which is part of entrepreneurship and part of building businesses and companies, we learned that there was actually a great opportunity for us to take that loyalty from not just that top 10% cohort, which are probably people that have bought 6+ times from your store. We're going to look at who are the people that are the first time buyers that have ended up on this on your site. They've, you know, word of mouth, whether or not you're running just any sort of paid media, billboards, anything like that. We know they're at the site, but how do we get them to sign up for a membership program so we can then tailor their experience from their first purchase all the way through until their 100th purchase, right? So we really want to focus on that then. And now we're solving not only the retention problem where, you know, those top 10%, top 20% cohort, they're not going to churn because they're paying for an experience and they're having a really, really delightful time with it. But now we can also focus to solve that acquisition problem because there's first-time buyers on the site and they want to, get the most bang for their buck. They're probably shopping around. But if you give them a free membership or a cheaper membership, you know, $5 a month or, 20 bucks a year, all of a sudden they're going to be like, wait a second, based on the benefits that are part of this membership program, whether it's free shipping or cash back or 20% off all products, or even, you know, for a lot of companies, early access to new products or exclusive member-only products, they're going to sign up for that on their first or second purchase, and then you can move them through the life cycle, upsell them into more paid plans and things like that.
Yeah, I like what you're saying, and I've seen a shift here, and you could probably speak to this, but I'm just talk a little bit about the shift once again from the way that we're acquiring new customers and then how we're maintaining that experience. And what are you seeing from brands that haven't made this transition to a very, you know, I guess, robust loyalty program, as opposed to brands that really haven't, and they're just only focused on getting new customers, right? I was just talking to my wife about this the other day. It was like, why are we not focusing more on just the overall experience of customers that we already have? You know, I think a lot of businesses sometimes forget that they literally have a gold mine sitting there with all of their customers. It's just how do you, you know, create a good experience?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, this could be a rabbit hole. Yeah, so I'll try to keep it. I'll try to keep it high level.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing for the, you know, these brands that aren't making the shift or haven't made the shift, a lot of it comes down to internal resources. And so, you know, they're like, well, you know, we're already so focused on, you know, Q4 or Black Friday, or they're like, we're focused on revamping our reviews platform, or they're focused on you know, new product development. And they're like, well, you know, we just don't have time for that. Mm. And so that's one of the things that we identified very, very quickly. And we said, well, why don't we have almost this hybrid model where, yes, we're a SaaS company, software as a service, for those that don't know. Mm. And we want to maintain that because of just the overall valuation of the company. The multiples that you sell for SaaS businesses for are much higher than service-based companies. And so, but at the same time, how can we create a hybrid model where we have this white glove service through our customer success department that's actually holding the hands of these customers or these merchants, these Shopify brands, these e-commerce brands, holding their hand through the process and actually doing the heavy lifting from a strategy perspective, but also the actual implementation of that program. And so we're like, this is like a really, really easy way for us to kind of combat that objection that brands have where we don't have the time to do it. You know, it's not, loyalty has never been like a big needle mover for us. And so they're kind of stuck in that mindset. It's like, no, this is actually how it could impact your business from a top line revenue perspective, from recurring revenue, and any of the other metrics like lifetime contribution margin. Like, that's a huge one. What is the actual profit that you're getting from your customers over a long period of time? And so those levers aren't pulled by traditional loyalty, and people haven't seen success. And so they're like, well, we're going to focus on other areas of our business. It's like, no, let us show you how this works.
Okay.
And let us show you how you can actually increase your revenue from this.
So it's an exciting time to be in the industry that you're in right now. I'm sure you have some stats or an understanding of the future of e-com. Are you doing any research on the future of e-com and where you see the industry going?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's probably one of the main things that we look at. And that's let's go back to the overall conversation about things to consider as an entrepreneur. It's really understanding the market.
Yeah.
It's understanding, you know, what are the trends looking like and what is the outlook. Of course, internally at corporate jobs, we always say 30, 60, 90. But then, like, let's start looking at this from a 1, 5, 10-year perspective. What is going to change? And what are the problems that people don't even know they have yet? And so that's one of the things that we really, really try to hone in on, or myself, when we're building product or building companies, what does that look like? What does that 1, 5, 10-year plan look like? And so for us, when we're looking at e-commerce, we're going to continue to see this shift, you know, away from traditional retail. I think that we've had kind of a schizophrenic last 3 years with COVID, because all of a sudden retail was dead because nobody could go out. And so everything shifted to e-commerce. Then, you know, COVID restrictions kind of lighten. People are like, oh, I'm chomping at the bits to get out and like see people and be around people. And so there was this, okay, well, things are kind of flipping right now, where people want to go back to the malls. They want to go back to the in-person stores. That, at this point, has tapered off quite a bit. And so people are like, okay, I'm actually sick of people, and I don't really want to go out, and I don't want to see things. It's just much easier to order on Amazon or order online, even groceries, things like that, with Instacart, DoorDash, all that stuff. So I think that what we're going to continue to see is the growth of e-commerce as a whole, but what it's neglected up to this point is that customer experience. And so Amazon, very, very simple, right? You just log in, you search the product you want, you hit buy, it's there in 2 days. That is, yes, a very easy buying process, but it doesn't foster true branding and the brand equity that a lot of these companies need to have. And so that's something that I think people are going to start getting frustrated with, because they're creating these amazing products, they're creating these amazing brands, they have followings, but the how easy it is for brands or for customers to buy just any product they want on Amazon, it's going to get old. And so how that's another reason that we're like, well, let's look at direct to consumer and, you know, buying directly from these brands. How do we enhance that experience so that people are like, well, you know, I don't need to go to Amazon because I know I can go to directly to the brand, get the same amenities as Amazon Prime. So expedited shipping, priority customer support, early access to, you know, new products or exclusive products like Prime-only products, things like that. If we can mimic that type of experience, but then put even more benefits on top of that, which actually builds a community around that brand, it's going to change the way that people are thinking about the way they're shopping. And they're going to be searching for more specific brands and products that speak to them versus just going on Amazon, finding the first thing on the listing that has the highest rating and buying it.
Well, I can see that customers are going to start to want to buy from companies that give them a better experience, you know, even though
right.
company A may be just as good,
yeah.
fast, blah, 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 but not the experience part over the course of many, many years.
Totally. And I think that there's also a trust issue.
That's good.
Like a lot of these products that are, you know, drop shipped or they're created, you know, overseas that are actually fake, like they're branded, but they're actually Amazon brands. But the consistency of the quality of the product is going to change constantly. And so you could think that like, oh, I love this product I got on Amazon. You buy it 3 months later, it's a completely different product. And so people are losing trust in that. And so how do we bring that trust back to these customers by giving them an incredible experience from a product perspective, but also from a community perspective? And so they're buying these products. If they're, you know, engaged in a membership program or a loyalty program, they're not going to go shop the market for a competitor.
Yeah.
If I like this T-shirt and it fits me, and I have a great buying experience through this brand, I'm not going to go look at the competitors because
yeah.
I already know that I have everything that I need, and those brands aren't going to have anything different, really.
Well, for example, I just bought some Taft shoes.
Oh, yes.
You ever heard of Taft shoes?
Yeah, I actually just got a pair, too.
So I get the Taft shoes sent to me, and inside the box, it's so elegant, man. I opened the box, and it was like there's another box inside of a box, and
yeah.
it was like perfectly packaged.
It's like Russian doll.
I was like, man, I want to keep this box and I just want to put it on my desk, you
yeah.
know, as a symbol of like greatness.
100%.
You know?
100%. And Apple started yeah. that, if we think about it.
Yeah, the box,
unboxing
yeah.
experience for Apple
yeah.
was like.
They did a lot of research on the actual
yeah.
feel and all that, you know, that silk feel.
Oh my God, I love it.
So I'm excited for you, honestly. I'm excited for the industry of e-com. I mean, I have an e-com brand, it's pretty fun, but it's like, there's a lot going on, and I feel like right now is actually a really good time to have this conversation
yeah.
heading into December
for sure.
and then also for the new year, right? So share with me what you're excited about personally and then also professionally within the company, and then what are your secret plans for the company in the new year? share with us with what you can.
Yeah, well, I'll put my filter on, which I typically don't have when I do podcasts or panels or speaking
yeah,
conferences.
Okay.
I can get a little... little excited, but what I'm most excited about right now is just the success we're seeing, and it's not necessarily our success as a company. It's the success that I'm seeing these brands have with this new type
Good.
Of loyalty program. Because if they're succeeding, we're succeeding, right? But to have taken this hypothesis or this theory of like, hey, we need to shake this up, creating the product around that, and then having, you know, $100 million brands install this onto their website and actually build a program around it, and then see the success that they're having. It's like light bulb moment. This is what I've been waiting for my whole career. And so it's just like a really, really thrilling experience for me. Now, of course, that comes with its own challenges, right? Because everybody across the ecosystem is going to, they're watching. They're seeing that, you know, the success. They're seeing this shift, this tectonic shift from the old school loyalty, traditional loyalty, to this new idea of, you know, experience-based and overall customer journey-based programs. And so, you know, we have a target on our back. And so I think that that's something that we always have to be aware of, and it's something that's very scary. And so the more success you have, the more eyes you have on you, and the more challenges you're going to face from competitors that are going to come in and build the same product as you, or they're going to try to, but then advertise that theirs is better. This is something that all businesses face, but it's especially rich within the e-commerce world because it's monkey see, monkey do. And so if, you know, there are two competing brands and they make a move, then the other brand is going to do the exact same thing because they're seeing perceived success from that. But really, at the end of the day, what excites me is the ability for us to have created a moat around the product that we've built. One,
yes.
because we're ahead. But two, the challenges that we've faced over the last 2 years in building this, a lot of people don't understand that. And so they're going to try to skip those steps like we just talked about. They're going to try to skip the steps to get where we're at. And it's going to be really, really challenging for them. And so I think that that's one thing I'm very, very excited for. And, you know, also any secret sauce, I guess, that we have for the upcoming year, you know, we're definitely expanding our team. And so I think that there will be a number of strategic hires that we're going to be making. And a lot of this is going to be around the larger roadmap and vision for what Inveterate becomes. We've been memberships, you know, we're kind of now transitioning into this loyalty activation suite where there's a lot of different pieces of loyalty. It's not just memberships. There's a lot more to it than that. And so that's what I'm like super excited about, that we're not just getting stuck in this or pigeonholing ourselves as memberships. It's going to be something that's much more that touches every single point within the customer lifecycle to promote that loyalty and repeat purchase rate.
I'm excited. Once again, it's going to be a great year, 2024, the year to soar.
There we go.
It just sounds so good. So I don't know. We just wanted to say thank you so much, Andy, for just taking the time and being on the Founders Odyssey podcast today. Hopefully everyone out there has derived some, you know, a bits of nuggets, not only from a technical standpoint, but also from a founder standpoint, from a personal standpoint and a business standpoint. So once again, if you guys liked today's podcast, feel free to subscribe to our YouTube channel, as well as these, we've got it on Spotify, and then just go to thefoundersodyssey.com. And any last words to say, Andy?
No, I mean, this is wonderful. I'm looking out the window behind you right now in the studio. Beautiful snow-covered mountains, so I couldn't be happier at the moment. So awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you again soon.